Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Attention collectors of vinyl, have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Patrick Leffler is an in-demand musical collaborator, songwriter, producer, singer, and multi-instrumentalist based in Toronto, Ontario. Much to my surprise, Leffler is originally from Guelph, Ontario, where I used to live, but he hasn't really been back there since he graduated from college in London, Ontario, and then headed to Toronto, where he began playing in bands and became a pivotal player in the city's psychedelic underground music and arts community. Leffler's solo expression is named Roy, and his latest album is a spellbinding and lovely one called Spoons for the World, which was released by Idée Fixe Records on April 19th, 2024. To mark the occasion, Patrick and I connected for the very first time and had a nice discussion about his work as a Foley engineer in the film and television industry, and then we tested out some sipping and kissing sounds on each other. It was really fun. The role that ambience and room sounds plays in his work, the athletes Patrick Waugh, LeBron James, and Brian Trottier came up in conversation. We discussed his growing up in Guelph and the premise that that city has a supportive arts infrastructure, how he got into his dad's record collection, the lyrical themes on Spoons for the World, and working closely on some string arrangements with producer Jeff McMurrick, upcoming shows, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform if you have a moment to do so. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. This is my only source of income these days, so any amount, however large or small, in support of the Patreon is greatly appreciated these days. Thank you very much for considering contributing to that. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 856 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Patrick Leffler of Roy, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Patrick. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. Where in the world are you there?
I'm in Toronto, Ontario, in my basement.
Oh, nice. It's very bright for a basement. You got a good window situation, maybe?
I got a good lamp right beside me.
Oh, is it a lamp? Oh.
Yeah, it's the old... I don't know. This laptop has funny graphics for the webcam. Blows it all out.
It does look like a basement, but I just thought you were illuminated by the sun, so you're not. That's fine. It looks nice.
We do have some windows down here, but we plugged them for sound because this is also our jam space.
Right. Do you record? I see you got a reel-to-reel there. Do you do a lot of recording?
Yeah, I got my reel-to-reel here. We do a lot of just kind of fun four-track recordings. There's like a whole bunch of keyboards and drums and amps behind me.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm recording into like this console here with some speakers and the whole thing.
Is part of your sort of working life recording other people or mixing other bands and stuff like that?
I've done quite a lot of like recording bands, and I actually work in film. I record Foley for television shows and movies. But yeah, both of those things are how I make my living, for sure.
Okay.
I went to Fanshawe, which is a college in London for recording production and stuff.
London, Ontario. For those listening around the world, London, Ontario, Fanshawe College. That's right. You know what? Some people might not know what you're referring to exactly. Can you tell the people listening at home, wherever they are, what is Foley exactly? What is your job?
Okay. I hope I don't ruin some television for people, because I've had some experiences where people are like, what's Foley? And then I tell them, they're like, what? But Foley is basically like lots of modern shows. They'll replace basically like interactive sounds from what's going on in scenes. So like I got a coffee cup here.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a coffee cup. They take a sip. We'll do a sip. Sip sounds. Or like somebody puts down their mug, you know, we're going to cover that. And it's kind of like, because they record dialogue on set and people are doing actions and then they do something and it interacts with their voice.
Right.
But it's kind of like how our Zoom microphones don't sound that great. The set audio sometimes is lacking for the cinematic experience.
Right.
So we'll like, basically there's a Foley artist, this is my friend Brandon. And he's watching the screen and he's trying to sync up actions with what's happening on the screen.
Yeah.
And we also do footsteps. So footsteps and interactive actions are replaced or added with set audio.
Now just to clarify this, are you drawing from like a sound bank or like say like I'll just do it right now. Say you're going to replace a sip, right? So here, I'm going to take a, is this you? Do you have to physically do this?
That's correct.
Or do you just draw from a sound, you know, a bank of sound effects and then just plug them in? Are you physically doing the walking around, the footsteps, all that stuff?
Yeah.
What kind of job is that? That seems like it sounds fun.
Yeah, it's very creative and like it's a very interesting field.
Okay, yeah, so
physically doing sips, because you can think about the variation in sips from mouth to mouth.
Yes.
Temperature of beverage.
What did you make of, I'm not a Foley artist, I just tried to perform some Foley. I don't know if I'm using the phrase, the word correctly. What did you think of my Foley action just now? The sipping.
Your sip? Your sip was pretty good.
It seemed natural, right? That's how human beings, they like...
Yeah, the coffee sip is the coffee and tea sip is the sip. You know, it's like,
yeah, that's right.
Somebody sips a beer bottle. It's not the same sip sound. It's more of like
a glug,
a bit of a glug.
Yeah,
maybe a bit of, yeah, like a bit of a ooh. Like there's
right.
All these
so
different sounds.
From your area of expertise, glass bottle, can, plastic bottle, all different sounds, right?
All different variations of a theme, yeah.
Right. But it's all sipping. So you see, you look on the screen and you see the actors sipping, and then you have to be like, do you have to get like an O'Doul's or like a Fanta? Like, do you get the specific thing to replicate, you know, for verite purposes?
I think it really depends on what their sip sounds like on the dialogue track kind
right.
of vibe. It's like, can you distinguish a Fanta sip from a Diet Coke sip or
I'm telling you right now, you don't know me, Pat. I would.
Yeah.
100%. I, you know what? I've said to my wife on occasion, we're watching a movie. I'm like, there's no way that was a Fanta sip. There's no way. They're trying to rip us off. That's fake. That's me. That's how I watch movies. I ruin everything for my wife.
Do you want to hear the other jokes one? Okay, this is the
okay.
This is
yes,
the best
please.
Part. Kisses.
Oh,
kisses are dubbed. Kisses are Foley.
Huh. Wait a minute.
So every time you see a kiss,
you have to emulate two people kissing, or do you have to make out with someone with a microphone in front of you?
Not me personally, but most Foley artists will kiss their hand and will stack it so it sounds like two kisses. And then you know you can move the sounds so it has a bit of a
listen,
like almost like.
All due respect to you and your work, you know, I know comedians, musicians. Sometimes people approach them on the street and they're like, "Entertain me, tell me a joke, sing me a song." I don't mean to do this to you, but since you brought it up, can you give us a kiss? Give us a Foley kiss, just so because I perform for you. I did a little sip.
Okay.
Can you give us a little example of a kiss?
I can for sure. I'm not a Foley artist. I'm an engineer, but I'll do my best interpretation.
Okay.
I think a key point is you got to have some water.
Yeah, you're having... Okay, so for those who can't see this, Pat just took a glug or a sip from a giant bottle of water. Hey, that wasn't one of those Stanley cups, was it?
No, it's a clean canteen.
Okay, nice job. Sorry,
Thank
I keep
you.
Hearing about these Stanley cups, and I don't know what the hell is going on. Anyway... All right, you're moistened.
You're I'm moistened.
Okay, let's hear it. I can't wait. This is great.
Okay. Climax of the movie here, people.
Oh, that's it. That's like a peck. I thought, do you have to emulate like a deep French kiss, or do the Foley artists have to like put some tongue in it?
I don't think you can hear that.
Hey, man, I've been through this before. I've heard it. I can hear a tongue flapping around in my head. It's getting a little absurd. I'm sorry. I don't know how you would distinguish. You know, where I'm saying Fanta, Coke, I'm saying French kiss, basic kiss. There's got to be a difference in sound. There must be.
I think the French kiss is longer. It's kind of more like...
Okay, I can't quite hear. It's hard.
I can't this quite is, hear it on the Zoom audio.
I like the other one was good. You had I could.
You're gonna
could,
laugh when you hear my the mic. It's
okay, yeah, I'll hear
hilarious.
It properly later. I enjoyed your moistened kiss. That sounded normal and natural. So your job is to go to a Foley artist with a microphone and capture that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and that's all day. Do you just do that all day? People kissing, sipping.
Kissing, sipping, walking, open, touching door handles, you know. Yeah, that's what I do. I don't work every day, but I work a couple times a week.
That's cool. Are there consistent?
Yeah.
You've done movies, I assume, as well as TV shows?
Yeah, I work on a lot of like Hallmark movies, which is kind of funny.
They film those in Toronto, do they?
Sometimes, but it's just we get sourced for the post-production. There'll be a company that deals with the what happens with the movie after it's been shot. and
yeah.
they'll contract the company I work for.
Good Lord, the Hallmark movie, you must be kissed. There must be like a billion kisses. Like you gotta, I've never seen one. I see the commercials and I'm like, eh, that looks like a kiss fest. And I say to my wife, I bet they're all fake.
Yeah.
Bunch of fake kissing going
Bunch
on there.
Of fake kissing, yeah.
Yeah. So you, you've got a, man, that's interesting. I have never talked to someone in Foley. So I'm sorry to dwell on this too much. Just to bring us to the reason we're here. Do you find your Foley work informs your music making when you're pondering overdubs or mixing or anything like that? Do you think they inform one another in any way?
Absolutely. I put out a record called Capitalism before this record. It was a couple years ago now. But my goal was to use things that I owned as inspirations for songs and trying to, in some cases, use the object in the song.
Yeah.
So I'd think that's the intersection of my music and Foley. And I also have like a sampler, which is like this, kind of looks like a calculator.
Mm-hmm.
You can load sounds onto it, and I'll put like, I'll go record some water or like nature sounds if I can get them to sound nice and like kind of trigger that for atmosphere within the scopes of a jam or something like that.
I am correct in my earlier assertion that there are companies that provide sound banks.
Absolutely.
For such things, right? But you tend to make your own sounds, always.
I think we do it that way because it's faster in the film business to just be cutting something using like recording software would take longer than for us to physically do it.
Yeah.
And there's also the interaction of the perspective of the basically the shot that we're covering, like. It's like for footsteps, if somebody's coming from far away, you kind of have to make it so it feels that way.
Yeah.
Rather than having like static audio with no basically surroundings, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of sound bank stuff will be, you can cut it in, but you'll have to like mess with how close it sounds. And sometimes if you're cutting something, it can sound artificial in that way because there's so many different perspectives that aren't balanced.
I feel like I can hear how your worlds collide a little bit in your music making. We've been enjoying your wonderful record that we're here to talk about today, Spoons for the World, and it has a bit of a ambiance, a haze maybe. Do you know what I'm getting at? Is that an accurate way of describing what you know what I mean?
That's a nice way. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so the songs, so just to clarify, you know, the songs are the songs. They're beautiful orchestral pop songs, folk songs. They're lovely. But each song kind of has this, like, low-lying hissing, like, or something. I don't know. Like, you can almost hear the air around the players and the musicians. And I know you tentatively agreed with what I'm saying, and then I've expanded upon it and maybe put my foot in my mouth. I apologize, Patrick, but I do, it's something there that you're going for that a little bit, right? That ambiance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the ambiance, I mean, when you said it, I kind of thought of like a mood, or like what I'm trying to do with music is like set a space that is kind of enjoyable, whether or not you're like in it or if it's just happening, you know, and ambience is a big part of that and like the feeling of sound.
Well, some artists and some recordings will do everything they can to minimize that kind of noise floor, the room sound, if you will, the space, like what you just said. I feel like I'm hearing the space and I'm hearing the microphones trying to capture the space.
Yeah.
The sound of the room. What I'm getting at, and I think you just corroborated this, you're interested in that room and space sound being a part of the song.
Absolutely.
Is that it? Yeah. So where does that impulse come from? What does it do for your songs, I suppose, to capture the, I want to say the feeling of the room. Like that's what it sounds like to me. It's, I know that's weird because it's a space.
Yeah.
It's walls and ceilings and doors. But I feel like when I hear that, and there's a billion recordings in my life where I'm like, oh, I can hear the room. The room is the feeling. The room has a feeling, I should say, I think. And then the song can have the inherent feeling of the room. That's where I'm coming from. You seem to relate to that. Why do you reckon you want the room to be part of the song?
I think that because... So I feel like I want an analogy here. Like, you're walking around different spaces. Like, you're... For some reason, I'm thinking of Central Park.
Central Park in New York. Okay. Yeah.
You're walking through the park, and then there's like a busker or like a saxophone is the best. They're like in one of those tunnels,
and you.
You're like approaching, and these sound waves are emanating out of the tunnel and in the tunnel and reverberating, and it's like holding. It's holding the music. It's holding the sound. Of the music, it's amplifying the way that the person who's playing is feeling. And I feel like that's an important contribution to the way that people hear music in real life. Like when you go, like, I don't know, old jazz recordings where it's just like people in a room and it's like very, like Django Reinhardt, like he play at this one club. I can't name it specifically, but it just has like this sound and people would love to hear it in that cavernous area. The Beatles, you know, things like that. It's like in the environment where they played adds to the music that they're making.
Right, right. Yeah. And so it's significant to you that the space has a character.
Yeah.
Where you're making the record. Okay. You mentioned a couple of artists, I think, or styles of music there. Patrick, I don't know a whole ton about you. You're based in Toronto, and you call your musical project Roy. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Roy, I thought maybe it was an allusion to Patrick Waugh, the goalie for the Montreal Canadiens.
The greatest goalie ever.
Yeah, pretty good. Butterfly style, pretty good.
Yeah,
bit of a hothead. I think.
Is he? I don't know enough about him.
Very infamous incident where he demanded to be traded during a game. That was the coach's fault. But he won a couple of cups and then he had a bad game and he was left in, I think, as a punishment. Like he was letting in a bunch of goals. And I can't remember what the score was, but he went to the bench and you could see it. If you were watching TV or if you were in the arena, you could see him being like, I quit. Goes to the coach, I'm done. It's my last game. And then he got traded to the Colorado Avalanche, I believe. Is that right? I think that's right. And then he won a Stanley Cup with them.
Yeah.
I like when a player on any sport leaves and like after winning championships, they go to another team and they win championships again. Isn't that amazing? Like, I mean, that's a testament to that player. Like,
yeah.
You know what? We can all lament and have our opinions about LeBron James, for example. But every team he's gone to has won the NBA championship. I've not seen the likes of this. I don't agree with it. I like, you know, I'm the old school. You stay on your team. Loyalty to the city, to the fans, to your teammates, to the organization. However, something kind of remarkable about everywhere you go, you win a championship, don't you think?
Yeah, I feel like it's like more loyalty to self.
It's a little selfish, but I think it is a testament to the greatness of a player. If they can just go any team they go to, they either put points on the board or they bring a winning attitude and mentality into the locker room, if you will. And I think there's something to it. I think there's
leadership.
There's probably a book in this. I'm newly unemployed, so I just think I have too many wild ideas now. I'm like, oh, maybe I should be a Foley artist. That seems good. I'm good at kissing. No, I was like, maybe I have a book idea or something. But I think like all these people who go to different teams, like you'll just come across a stat where some unassuming player, Brian Trotche, has won Stanley Cups on like basically every team he was on. Maybe we should talk to him. Like maybe he's a cog, unassuming, everyman kind of player, put points on the board. Probably something there, though. If everywhere you go, you win a cup or a championship.
I feel like this this book can relate to like the blue zones. Have you heard about the blue zone where people live longer?
Oh,
there's this doc on Netflix. Where
is this about like the
about,
people in the Mediterranean and they live longer because they eat well and all?
Yeah.
That? Yeah. I've heard of that. Yeah, that could be a thing too. Maybe I can combine the two books. Maybe I can do a book about how Brian Trache won everywhere he went, but also seems to be ageless and timeless. I'll try to figure this out. Why did I start talking about this? Oh, I'm sorry. It was one of my tangents. I thought maybe I'd ask you if it was Roy or Wa. It sounds like it's Roy. So I want to ask
Roy,
you about.
Yeah.
I want to ask you eventually about the naming convention. But I also, like I started to say, I don't know a whole ton about you. I don't know where you come from in terms of your music making. Can we get into your origin story a little bit? Where are you from, and how did you get into music as a fan before you became a player? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I'm from Guelph, Ontario.
Get out of town! Are you crazy? Did you know I'm from Guelph? I lived in Guelph for 23 years.
What?
Are you nuts? Really? You didn't know that?
No.
I lived in Guelph from 1996 to 2019.
Holy smokes.
I'm not trying to sound immodest. Some people around the world associate me with Guelph. Someone just told me that the other day. A musician on the show said, you know, I associate you with Guelph and you're not there anymore. I said, yeah, I know. I moved to Edmonton. When were you in Guelph?
From when I was like... I mean, I was born in Kitchener, and
what?
I lived in Guelph
Come
my
on.
Life.
I was born in Kitchener. I was born
Grand
in the
River
Kitchener
Hospital.
I was born in the Kitchener Hospital, raised in Cambridge, Ontario, but I don't know why I was born in Kitchener. That's weird, man. Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I feel like we're bonded for life.
You look
now.
So familiar, and now I'm like,
okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were born in
Kitchener. No, I love it.
You're born in Kitchener, and you were raised in Guelph. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was raised near Stone Road Mall.
Stone Cold Mall?
And then I moved... Yeah, Stone Cold Mall. And then I moved to the South End, where all the new subdivisions and stuff are.
Okay, so...
I went to Bishop Mack.
Okay, cool. So what time period, roughly, are we talking about?
I'm born in 92.
Okay, so this explains it. You were 4 when I moved to town. We wouldn't, and exactly. I was going to university as an 18-year-old. We would not have interacted,
never.
But I was there a long time. Did you attend shows? Did you play any shows? Did you play in any bands?
Yeah, I had a band with my friend called From Now Till Forever. It was like an emo band.
Okay.
Emo folk band. We played a lot at The Shadow.
Oh, right.
And we played at Vinyl. I think I played my first show at Vinyl.
Oh, yeah. I used to play there.
Which is Jimmy Jazz.
Yep.
All the places, really.
Okay.
It's changed so much now, but...
I think some of it's the same. Vinyl has a new name. It's called... what's it called?
The Royal?
Maybe it's Royal Electric. Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Yeah, right.
We nailed it.
Yeah, and then the Jimmy Jazz was still there the last time I was in town.
Yeah, it's still kicking. Yeah.
Okay, wow. That's,
but they're connected.
That is wild. It sounds like you were in the kind of... younger emo punk situation.
For sure.
So when I was putting on shows, we may not have... Did you ever go to shows at the E-Bar or anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I went to... Some of my friends played there. I didn't play there growing up,
right.
But lots of good shows happened there.
I feel like I put on most of the shows I did at the E-Bar. Like, I would put on shows as well as play them.
Well, you put on the good shows.
I may have contributed to some. I think that's possible. I don't know. Depends on your definition.
That's so funny.
Good. Yeah, that is wild to me. I'm sorry. I did not know this at all. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Let's get back to you. You grew up in Guelph.
Uh-huh.
Let's get back to what got you into music as a fan, first of all, and then as a player, just because I don't know the story, and now... Everything you say, I hope I don't cut you off being like, get the hell out of here. Me too. I had the same thing. I'm sorry. Sorry, Patrick. How did you get into music as a fan?
My dad loves music. He loves the blues. I grew up listening to the blues basically through my dad and their record collection.
Now, wait a minute. What era of the blues are we talking about? Like
kind of all spanning. Yeah, he was into it all, except for what he called the scratchy blues, which is funny, which is like the old just acoustic guitar stuff from the 40s. And
okay, so he's not a Charlie Patton
blind
No,
but I am. I love that stuff.
Yeah, okay. Got it.
he's into like Albert King and Stevie Ray Vaughan. But I there's one definitive musical moment for me growing up, which is my parents sat me down. It was almost like they were teaching me how to be patient and enjoy art. They sat me down and made me listen to Shine On You, Crazy Diamond.
By Pink Floyd. Huh.
Yeah, which is like 15 minutes long. Yeah. I'm like 14 and into like screamo and emo music. I'm like, what is this? Amazing recording.
Yes.
As I know now.
Yes.
As I appreciate now. But basically just through, nobody in my family was really musical, but just through the love of music, I became interested in it. And I think, you know, my brother had a bass at one point. And I was like, that seems kind of cool. I want to try that. And now he doesn't play bass, but I play the bass. So
I see. Are you a multi-instrumentalist?
Yeah, I'll play pretty much anything. I play drums, piano, guitar, sing, play bass. I'm learning the tenor saxophone.
Oh, cool.
Or relearning, or I'm not really sure. But I played tenor in band in high school, so yeah. It seems like familiar.
Yeah.
To try and pick it up again.
But now you'll concentrate more on it and actually want to do it. It's not going to seem like a chore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's interesting. Did you enjoyed the Pink Floyd epic song?
I did.
Even in the moment, you weren't like, what the hell? I don't want to listen to this.
I was like, what the hell? And then you kind of get through that. And then it's just like, this is freaking awesome. Like, because the song has such a long, kind of like a sizzle.
Yes, a sizzle. It has a kind of an ambiance, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah. So is that your gateway into more, for lack of a better term, psychedelic music?
I don't really think I got into that kind of stuff until maybe I was like 21 or 22 or something. Like, I went to college and I got all my dad's records because they were in like storage.
Yeah.
At his buddy's place. So I got all his records and had them in my dorm room. And there was all this stuff that he like hadn't showed me that he would listen to back when he was my age that was like a little more in that territory. And I was like, it kind of just seeped really slowly. And then I don't think I started making that music until I lived in Toronto.
Hmm. What kind of records were you referring to there?
I'd say like the gateway is like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or like Buffalo Springfield. Definitely Buffalo Springfield. The recordings have this like quality of psychedelia for me that is natural and also like it takes something that you know what it is and makes it like way more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And you probably could see a link between the emotional tenor of CSNY and maybe some of the emo stuff. Mm-hmm. I know on the surface, they might seem completely disparate, but I imagine you're like, nah, there's feeling in both of these things, like a tremendous amount of feeling in both of these things. I'm guessing you felt that way. And if so, like, how would you characterize them in terms of your relationship to the feeling of hearing and making such music? Can you possibly articulate that?
I'll do my best. I feel like emo, screamo, like hardcore music for me was like a kind of like a stepping stone for growth and like anger. I wasn't really angry though, so I don't know if I really resonate with that. But
yeah,
I feel like with CSNY and like some of those records, there was more like a cool factor to feeling. It was like cool to, and the atmosphere of like emo music is more like longing or like
Or it's like maybe a more hopeful thing to the hippie-ish music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Whereas the emo music feels
a bit angsty.
Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. So are you somewhere
kind of
between?
Yeah. Like,
I interrupt this episode of my own show for a brief thank you for hearing my call to support me and my work on Patreon. We have seen a lot of growth in Patreon support over the last little while, which is amazing because that's my primary source of income these days. And I love doing this job that I invented for myself a whole lot. Creative Control is a listener-supported podcast. Do podcasters receive any streaming royalties from podcast platforms? No, not any. Does podcast advertising pay the bills? Not for a show at this scale, no. Do all podcasters get paid by companies for their work like some celebrities do? No. No, most of us do not. We do this work to support our communities and because we love it. So what's the most reliable source of income for podcasters like me? Crowdfunding platforms like Patreon. So if you love Creative Control with Vish Khanna and want to see it continue, please see the notes in this episode. Click on the link that takes you to my Patreon and its different donation tiers with various incentives and benefits, and support me and my work today. Thank you again so much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, it's funny. You've got a song on your new record. It's the title track, I guess, Spoons for the World.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, on the surface of it, it seems very kind of sunny. Just the arrangement, the delivery. But then I wondered if it was about economic disparity. I've got spoons for the world, silver spoons for the world. Isn't it funny how things fall to place like rain on the window, a familiar pace? Isn't it funny how things fall to place made me think of people who have money and have that fortune? Like good fortune and actual fortune. And I wondered if you feel like in some of your work, you're marrying these concepts of hope and a bit of darkness or a little bit of critique. Anything I'm saying resonate with you?
Definitely. I like your interpretation. I feel like for me, that song, well, Spoons for the World comes from this saying that my mom has, and it revolves around kind of like emotional availability. It's like you wake up each day and you only have so many spoons that you can give out to like the people that are in your universe, or like,
right.
It doesn't have to be the closest people to you. It's just like how much energy basically you have for the day. And Spoons for the World is me kind of taking that phrase and adapting it to being like, I want to have spoons for the world. So
in a spirit of generosity, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm obviously maybe falsely.
But obviously it's impossible.
Well, it is impossible. I guess I landed on silver spoon. You know what I mean there? Like the term to have a silver spoon in your mouth to be, you know, have, while some people might grow up on their back foot, you've got you've got an advantage. Mm-hmm. So I just, sorry if I'm bringing darkness to your sunny song, but I thought it might be a little bit about wealth disparity as well.
It's interesting. I thought about silver spoons. When I think about the silver spoon as like an image or as a representation, to me, it's more like medicine.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, I think it's sort of common. It's an axiom. It's a colloquialism. I don't know what kind of ism it is. Isms, in my opinion, aren't good. It's one of those isms that you know, to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. It's to be like, you're rich. You have an advantage. Oh. So I just heard that, and it just, that's what it conjured for me. I should point out to you, Patrick, I'm old. I know older expressions. It might mean different use. Medicine, that's interesting. Where does that come from for you? Is that some sort of literary thing? I've not heard that before.
I kind of thought that I exist in a bit of my own world a little bit, but I kind of thought that people were like given medicine with silver spoons at a certain era in time.
I know you can kill werewolves with silver bullets. I wonder if to kill a werewolf, you would serve them cereal with a silver spoon. I think I've just opened up this song to a whole other realm of possibilities, and I'm being silly. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful song. Okay, so you go from being exposed to folk music with sizzle. It's got heart and soul and hope in it. How do you go from there to, I suppose, leaving the angsty emo behind and trying to express yourself as a songwriter, as a musician? I think, you know, you mentioned CSNY, Buffalo Springfield. Probably safe to say Roy is more of an exploration of those kinds of sounds. How did we get here? How did you get to this place where you're like, I think I have something to say in this realm?
For like maybe for longer than I've been doing Roy, I had another project called Oxford Blue, which was very like country. And as I went on to the later portion of it, kind of exploring into like kind of more 70s country with like the backbeat, like Willie Nelson vibes, kind of like that outlaw kind of thing.
Yeah.
And around that time, I was also playing in a Toronto band called Vipers, which was like a kind of punky, shoegazy vibe. And I kind of felt those two worlds marrying, where it was like a little bit of excitement mixed in with soulful singing. And so I started kind of moving away from making country tunes, which are just like always will hold a place in my heart, but are kind of like down this narrow line on the highway. It's like you got to stay in your lane a little bit. It's like preaching to tradition, whereas like the exploration of more exciting music, or like to me, is you can kind of do whatever.
Yeah.
And with Roy, that's kind of my goal, is to just try different things.
Yeah.
Based off how I'm feeling within my life. Like I feel like I've made like four different genres of records already.
Yeah.
And now I'm coming back. So I don't know. It's kind of like an accordion.
Well, it reminds me, the new album anyway, it does harken back to sort of the Nashville approach to music making, where it's a large group of people making a record together, seemingly all in the same room. The notion of backup vocalists, particularly female backup vocalists, I think, accentuating and emphasizing certain lyrics. It's a really rich and beautiful sound, if I may say. And I don't mean to keep dwelling on your past, but I'm just curious where Roy actually comes from. If I have the trajectory in my mind correct, you leave Guelph for London for college. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You finish college. You've got the sound skills developed. Do you move back to Guelph, or do you head straight for the Big Smoke, Toronto?
I went to the Big Smoke.
Okay. So you go to Toronto. Why? Why did you think? Because just so it's, you know, I miss Guelph. Some days, some days more than others. I think of it as having a very vibrant music and arts community. It's got some infrastructural issues. There's not a lot of local. There is a fair amount of support, but Guelph has had a venue issue forever. It's harder than ever, I think, to actually put on affordable shows. This is a hearsay. I'm well removed from it. So if anyone disputes.
No, you're so right.
Oh, yeah, it's still the case. I just know people will ask me, like, hey, you used to live in Guelph. Where can we play? And I say, I'll text some Guelph people who used to help me, and we'd work together. And they say, oh no, those three places are shut down. The only place is this place, but they're also charging a lot now. It used to be, you know, we understand you need a place to put on a show. You can have that space. We'll just take the bar. And you say, okay, that's something. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You're running a business. I'm trying to put on an event for the people in the community. That seems reasonable enough. I feel like even that's not an option as much anymore. But again, you probably left. Wait a minute. You were born in 92, so you're...
I left 2011.
Yeah, so you left just as things were starting to feel a little weird there. Did you ever think, like... Sorry, is in your experience as a Guelph person, a Guelphite, as we used to be called, did you feel like that, what I'm describing, like that it was a supportive or vibrant music, arts, and culture kind of community?
I felt like Guelph has always had that premise.
Right. That's okay. That's interesting.
And when I was a teen, I felt pretty, like, supported. But it was also, like, in the most dungy area. It was, like, so I would have taken anything at that point.
Right.
Like, I didn't really have the knowledge to be like, oh, we shouldn't. Maybe this place is a bit sketch, eh?
I see. Yeah.
And going back now and trying to play shows, I kind of find it hard. I mean,
yeah.
Most of the time I end up playing at my friend's vintage shop, and she's amazing, Outpost Vintage.
Oh, on Wellington Street or Woolwich Street, something like that?
Yeah, she's moved. She's right by City Hall now.
Oh, okay. Oh, on Carden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. It's hard. It's harder than ever, it sounds like. I'm a bit removed from it. So, okay. I just, you know, for a city of its size to have whatever, at the time I grew up, there were always people, there was like a local concert promoters. Like, you know, they had a name. They would be like a little organization, like Kazoo, or I did it. Like a few people just had like a little production company that they would put together.
Yeah.
And get shows happening so that people would know about Guelph and local bands would get a chance to play and all that kind of stuff. And also then there were like 5-6 festivals, more probably, but 5-6,
yeah.
5 or 6 that come to mind as being kind of subversive arts kind of festivals. So it feels, you're right, that word premise is fascinating. That's a really good word. And I feel like people living there now that I know anyway, I think that'll really resonate with them. It's supposed to be like that. Is it though? Is it supposed to be? Like, isn't it supposed to be better than what it is? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just wanted to ask you about that because you finished college. You might have the inclination to go back home and figure out your next move, but you seem to head right for Toronto. Toronto, great and vibrant arts community too, not without its obstacles. Did you fit in? Did you feel comfortable when you got there?
I think it took me 5 or 6 years, honestly,
yeah.
Like dogging it before I was like feeling comfortable with having people to reach out to if I wanted to get something going.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's pretty fair for anywhere you go, unless I don't really know how that stuff works. Unless you have like internet clout, but
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You can just kind of go anywhere, but
yeah.
To like actually be in a physical space and contribute to a community, I feel like takes years of trying to exist within it before you actually do.
Yeah, and you have been someone who's like you've got Roy, but you have collaborated with other artists, other bands, other people. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, I played in, or I still play in a band called Possum, mm-hmm. which is another Idéfix roster. I played in that band Vipers for many years.
Yeah.
I have a band now with my housemates called The Royal Family. We put out a record in December on We Hear Now Records. The backup vocalists on the record are in a band Cali Horse. They're really amazing. Like,
oh, nice. I don't know them. I love what they've done on your record. So I want.
They're really big into the Foley stuff. Sam is a Foley artist as well, and she's like they've got all these samples going and just like the record they put out last year is like astonishing. It's a really good listen.
I appreciate all the entry points you're giving me into the Foley community. I was not expecting that today. That's fascinating to me. Okay. So you made some friends and you started playing. I have two questions. When did Roy sort of come into being? And I alluded to this earlier. I don't know where the name, why call it Roy? You know, I want to commend myself right now. I don't know Patrick. I thought I'm going to accidentally call this guy Roy a couple times.
Lots of people do call me Roy.
Well, you named your band, I think,
yeah,
after a name. So
it's kind of like it's like an alter ego. Somehow, when I started doing it, that's how I looked at it. It was like an opportunity to do different things without the guise of like a birth name. And it was like, I really like Roy Orbison. And honestly, I think I was just obsessed with Roy Orbison at the moment. I'm just like, I'm just going to go with that.
I see.
Think, Roy.
I was going to, of all, there are many famous Roys. I think of it as kind of a country Sun Records kind of name. So
yeah, Roy Acuff. Or,
yeah.
There's so many
Roy
Roys.
Rogers. Like there's all sorts of
Roy Rogers. Yeah.
Roy Wood Jr., who's a comedian, has been on my mm-hmm. show many times. Not the same ilk, but you know what I mean. Yeah, Roy's. So you just get, you could have called it Phil or Jeff, you know, like I guess.
Bobby Joe.
Yeah, yeah. So you went with Roy. Okay, so that's Roy Orbison. Thank you for that. When does the notion of putting a band together as Roy work out? And also, I don't know, is it a band? Is it you and then whoever can play? Can you talk about that a little bit? Who do you play with?
Yeah, it's a live group, but the recordings, like half of that record is kind of me overdubbing with myself and then having strings and vibe players come and play on top, like various layers of overdubbing. And then some of the record, like the song Spoons for the World, is like me, the drummer, Jay Anderson, my friend Harrison, who I play in his band as well, Hieronymus Harry, just the three of us playing the tune. And then everything else is actually overdubbed, the piano, the guitar, and the vocals were all overdubs, but the main vocal, acoustic guitar, and bass and drums were all live. So it's like creating that element of the space as like a real vibe setter and kind of building with it.
I see. And then you've got the string production, I think, fell to Jeff McMurrick. Is that right?
Yeah, Jeff. I sent them the record in its, to me, kind of finished state. And Jeff was like, can we sweeten this? And I was like, okay. Like I was cool with how it sounded, but he was like, strings and vibes. And I'm like, how could I say no? Like it's going to sound amazing.
Yeah.
And they added such an amazing layer.
Wow. I can't imagine these songs without those. So that's fascinating that it wasn't, there's a version of this record that doesn't even have that, I suppose, in a way.
Totally.
Huh. Okay. That's fascinating. And Jeff, for those who don't know, he's a brilliant engineer and record producer and co-runs Idée Fixe, the label that this album is out on. So a man of many hats, I suppose. And it sounds like you've had a bit of do you have a working relationship with him beyond Roy?
Our relationship is work and personal. Like we're good buddies. And he's taught me a lot about audio and just like the vibe of studios and sound. Like his ears are golden for sure. Like,
yeah.
And
no, he's certainly one of the world's best engineers. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He learned from the guy who recorded Buffalo Springfield as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's like this seeping down of classic information that he has.
Right. So that's a through line for you, given your early exploration of them. I alluded to the first song and did a somewhat, or depending on your perspective, somewhat clumsy lyrical interpretation. There seems to be a lot of humor to me. Like there's some elements of fun and jokiness on some level. I think I can't help but think that. Is humor a part of your work on some level, your process in writing?
Yeah. Like Zappa always said, people would bring him songs and he was just like, the best songs are the ones that make me laugh.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the Mothers of Invention stuff. And so I just love that approach where it's like sound and words and the combination of them can make you laugh, should make you laugh in this way that is like a joyous child.
Yeah.
Or like kind of like laughing at, like it's like making fun of something and you're like,
but does that extend? Yeah. Does that, so there's a lyrical intent there, but even in the arrangements of like a little more time amuses me as much as it gets to me emotionally. So is the musical arrangement part of the fun for you?
It's hard for me to answer that because my intention was just to like, I don't think I thought quite deeply about the humor in that song.
Yeah.
But like there are definitely like funny elements about some of the lyrical content, like does the water rock your boat and make you seasick? Like that's kind of jokes thing to say.
Cold water in my tea seems...
Yeah, that's definitely jokes. I'm just trying to be like, I wanted to sing it like British, but I'm not going to do that.
It has, and it has a inherently funny, suspicious,
like,
suspicious paranoia can be very funny. And that's kind of what I pick up on there. So I guess what I'm getting at is, do you feel like this batch of songs reflects a particular feeling you were going after? Something you were trying to express, or is each song kind of distinct from one another, so to speak? Do you feel like there's threads here?
I think they all like can land within the same, a similar place. Like they complement each other, but each song is definitely like its own vibe and journey. And this album for me feels personal now.
Yeah.
Like it's like in the moment, it's just like trying to get something onto the tape or just try and do something. And then afterwards being like feeling like it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Songs kind of do that for me sometimes. It's just like, oh shit, that song's about that now.
Yeah.
It's like they change. The relationship to the song changes as time goes on.
Are you a pop culture person generally? Like, I was thinking about the song I Ride the Highway. On the one hand, riding a highway is, by this point, a bit of a musical cliche on the one hand. Mm-hmm. But I think you do something really interesting with it. I ride the highway looking for a small change everywhere that I go. I mean, I can picture or hear like Hank Snow or someone singing this song or Lee Hazelwood or something like that. But then I hear Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World in it, in the phrasing a little bit. Is that something that you conjured?
Absolutely. I love that song so much. I sang it at my grandfather's memorial that we held during COVID. And it was like that song just has so much power and joy with like... And you think about the context of Louis singing that song, being black at the time that he was, the juxtaposition of that is just, that's music. It's like, how much joy can I find in this moment to sing this song in this way?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear about your grandfather, first of all. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading into this, but I feel like you're a bit of a double meaning writer, whether you mean to be or not. I'm hearing things that maybe, it sounds like I've said a few things, you're like, oh, I hadn't thought of that, which is good. It makes me sometimes feel, I'm a private investigator on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I hear a clue and I want the guest to always be like, aha, you got me. I'm joking, obviously, but I hear these allusions that you make, and I'm just saying, I'm picking up on some stuff, and I hope that's okay with you.
Absolutely. Highway is totally about like traveling and then like feeling like every place has this kind of similar oppression.
Yes.
Yeah. So you hit the nail on the head, really.
Yeah, and then you've got What a Wonderful World in there, too, which is this light, trying to find some light in the darkness of the world. So I don't know. I feel like that's a running theme a little. For me, from my perspective, it's an optimistic record, but I think you are, whether you mean to be or not, addressing some other things. You're addressing the necessity of finding that light
Yeah,
like why it's important to be looking for the light. And I think your songs make me smile, like physically. It has a physiological, visceral, I smile, but I also, it makes me think, you know, this is a commentary as well on something.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. I'm still cracking codes, obviously, on that, but I just want to commend you for it. I really love this record. It sounds great. It's beautiful. As we wind down here, is there anything more you want to say about it that we haven't covered? Anything that you're surprised I didn't bring to light? I just got knocked for not talking about an album cover.
I mean, I do love the album cover for this record.
Yeah, let's talk about it. What's going on with the album cover?
My partner made it. They're a textile artist. And the whole thing is, it's a quilt. The front is a quilt that Alex Sterlak and I photographed. And then, all the fabric is hand dyed and hand sewn and very organic. Their process is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect merging for me of it was the physical entity of how the album feels.
Is the album going to feel like a material, like the album, the actual physical album? Sometimes they do weird things at E-Day Fix where the album has almost a 3D. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, the origin story of E-Day Fix was that Jeff would produce the records and Alex made, he used to do printing.
Yes.
And so that's why all those older records have the beautiful qualities, because he was overseeing it. But I think they've kind of departed from that model, unfortunately, just lives change.
Yeah. Alex is a really gifted graphic designer and I don't know what the word is. He makes really cool stuff. I don't know if he still does it. He used to have a company called Standard Form.
Yeah.
And a label and a publishing house and all sorts of, like I say, physical manufacturers. Sorry, Alex, if you're hearing this and I'm mischaracterizing the company. Do you know? Is Standard Form still going?
I don't know.
Okay, never mind. I'll fact check this later. If only there was a way to look up things, a Google
Alex
or something.
He's always helped me with the artwork. Like, I'll have some crazy shit ideas.
Oh, okay.
That I'll bring to him, and then he can make anything feel like part of the E-Day Fix world, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Alex Sterlak is kind of a genius, as is Jeff. So this is good. You're working with some real geniuses there. I want to ask you about where people can go to learn more about you and this record. I'm guessing E-Day Fix is one destination, so that's that. But if you want people to follow you and whatnot, where would you like to send them?
The E-Day Fix website is a great resource for listening. You can go to my Bandcamp page, which is thesoundofroy.bandcamp.com. Mm-hmm. And that actually has that Capitalism album as well, because that's not on any streaming services.
Okay.
And then, my music is on, other than that record, is on all the big streamers.
The big things, okay.
And you can follow me on the gram. I don't really post very much.
Instagram is one destination. I must also ask, future plans? And also within that, are you working on new material now? What's coming up for you in that regard?
We're doing a release show here in Toronto, April 20th at the Garrison, being put on by the Class Collective, which is a collective run by my friends. And then we're doing a residency at the Cameron House in May.
Cool.
Wednesdays from 6 to 8, every Wednesday except for the first one.
In the back room
there?
That
was kind of in the front room.
Front room, okay.
I used to play there when I was doing the country thing, and I've maintained friendships with lots of the people who play there and book the stuff there. So I love playing in that room, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to do it with the band every week and kind of just get into a thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all we have planned for shows at the moment. I'm obviously going to do some planning for the summer, but I kind of take things one thing at a time.
Mm.
And I'm not working on any new material. I'm kind of looking for inspiration in which direction I want to go, I think. And when I make a record, I'm like normally like have a really strong focus with the sound.
Maybe you can write a concept record about Guelph, Ontario.
Guelph, Ontario. I could. There's lots of nice things in Guelph.
Yeah, there might be. It might be worth examining it. That's where you're from. Sorry, this is wrong. I shouldn't be telling you what to do. Who the hell am I? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
What's your next best idea? Concept album.
Concept record about Kitchener, Ontario.
Kitchener? No, not place. Conspiracy. Conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory. Concept record about Ticketmaster.
Oh, God.
Sorry, my whole feed is all the time now are just people being like, I can't wait to go to this concert. Then like a day or two later, what the hell? I'm in the queue for this concert. Oh, what the hell? The tickets are $3,000. And then, you know, a few hours later, fuck it. I'm not going to any concerts. This sucks.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day, that's my feeds. And it's ridiculous. So concept record about Ticketmaster, you might get some ears on that. People might buy it just out of solidarity. You know what I mean?
I feel like it would become more of a protest record than a concert.
Hey, what's wrong with a good protest record? I think we need them.
No, I think we need more.
We need more. So a lot of bad shit going on. Okay, we've done plugs. I'll link to all the stuff you said. If we can go out on a song from Spoons for the World, I would love to do that. Patrick, if you can pick a song for us to go out on, please do. And if so, can you tell us why you chose it?
Let's go for I Ride the Highway. Because it is the next single, and it's just such a vibe.
Absolutely, and you can maybe pick up on the references I made earlier to a very famous pop anthem full of hope and light in the darkness. Sorry, now I'm telling people what it's about. I'm terrible. I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry, Patrick. You framed it just fine.
I'm not going to tell them, so I'm glad that you are.
This is I Ride the Highway by Roy from this beautiful new record, Spoons for the World. Patrick, what a pleasure for me to talk to you. I hope you enjoyed some semblance of this and that we speak again someday maybe. And otherwise, best of luck in the future. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to meet another Guelphite.
Yes, absolutely. More Guelphites in the world, I say. It should happen.
Yeah.
Small thing you could. couldn't say, but you know. I see two lights in the distance up ahead.
This is such a lovely album, this Spoons for the World, and it's not even out quite yet. I hope you enjoyed what you heard from Spoons for the World by Roy. Thanks again to Patrick Leffler for appearing on this, the 856th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available everywhere you get your podcasts. If you can't locate an episode that you've heard about and it's not on one of those podcast platforms, or if you want to learn a little bit more about me for some reason, and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com and like Creative Control on various social media platforms. There's a little link in the show notes that says follow Vish online. That's where you can engage with me on all the current social media platforms that most of us use. And also you can access the YouTube version of the show, which is just the audio of the show on YouTube mostly. There's every once in a while there's some video clips and things like that. And you can also visit the Patreon. Patreon.com/creativecontrol is where you can go to make a flexible monthly donation. Support me and my work, as you've heard a lot lately. This is my only source of income, so I'm really relying on it to get me through here. And hopefully not, you know, I don't really want to get a job doing something I don't care as much about as I do this. That's kind of where I'm at. Economics may dictate that that's not an option for me, but so far so good. The growth we've seen with this Patreon is unbelievable. I can't thank you all enough for supporting me and my work. You've heeded these pleas and calls, and I know they, for those of you who've heard them a lot, it must be irritating, but it's the reality of the situation, so I'm treating every episode like there's someone new listening, and I think that's a good philosophy to have. So sorry if you've heard it a bunch, but by the way, you can hear ad and promo-free episodes of this show on the Patreon at the $4 American a month tier. You get all these episodes without the promos in the middle and the ads and stuff at the beginning. So if you're really sick of it, that's one way to avoid it, is becoming a Patreon member at that $4 USD level. But yeah, anyway, thanks again for considering it. Any amount works. The larger the amount, the better. So tug on your rich uncle's ear there and be like, I know you're always throwing money at the horses and the doggies on the track, but come on. How about this guy? Support this guy. So thank you. I hope you'll be able to support the show if you can. Also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. Also, Jim Guthrie lends me some music for this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode featuring Roy. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check out the Roy music that's coming out soon, if it's not out already by the time you hear this. And otherwise, I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.